Our scripture reading for this hour's lesson is taken from Romans, the 14th chapter. Romans, chapter 14, and verse number 12. Romans, the 14, and verse number 12. Paul writing says, "So then every one of us shall give account of himself to God." Once again, a pleasant good morning to you. Appreciate you being here with us as we worship God in spirit and in truth. It is so wonderful to see so many smiling faces, including some faces that have been out due to sickness and other trips and whatnot. Once you know that we're glad that you're back. We have missed you. We still kept worshiping because that's what we're supposed to do, but we have missed you, and we're glad that you are back. To those listening by way of radio, although you can't see our smiling faces, we'd love for you to sometime, if you have a chance, to come be with us at any opportunity here at the Arlington Church of Christ. You'd be our welcome and our honored guest. I can think of no place else I would rather be than right here, right now, in the Lord's Church. Dear friends, if you're not a member of the Lord's Church, maybe you're visiting us this morning and you're not a member of the church, we're going to encourage you to become a member by hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, being baptized. You go down that watery grave, you come up a new creature alive in Christ. Dear Christian friend, we're going to encourage you to live faithful to the Lord. And in doing so, in our lesson today, I want us to talk about our personal responsibilities that we have to the church. You know, in life, I have a lot of responsibilities. As a husband, there are certain things that I must do. As the one who pays the bills, there are certain things that I must do at work. Certain things that I must do. Certain responsibilities that need to be met on a daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly business. Well, dear friends, we have responsibilities to the Lord's church as well. We can't just come in as a Christian and kick our feet up on the pew and just kind of put our hands behind our head and say, "Boy, this is great," and not do anything. No, dear friends, as we have just read from Paul's letter to the Roman church in Romans 14 and verse number 12, every one of us must give account of himself to God. Now, did you catch that word, himself? See, the Bible doesn't say that everyone must give an account of Gary's life or of Bobby's life. No, I must give account for me, and you must give account for you. Therefore, that means I've got certain responsibilities that I'm going to have to give account for, and the way that we've lived our lives. Now, I do feel it's important to note, and we learned this from the parable of the talents in the 25th chapter of Matthew. In Matthew 25 and verse 14, a man, as he's going away for a while, has three servants. And to the first servant, he gives five talents. To the second servant, he gives two talents. And the final man gets one talent. Three separate men did not all have the same ability. Now, these talents would have more been like a measurement of money, but the application is still the same, dear friends. We don't all have the same abilities. We don't all have the same talents. So it would be very unfair then for you to try to give an account of my life, because you don't know maybe how I can use my skills or vice versa. So we must all give account of ourselves. And we learn what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20, that our bodies are the temple of God. Our bodies, and therefore our spirits themselves, since we are created in the image of God, we belong to God. Everything about us. Yes, it's my body, and I can choose whether I want to use this brand of shampoo or that one, or what I want to eat this or that. But in the important things that matter, my body belongs to the Lord. I should present my body, as Paul says, as a living sacrifice, Romans 12, 1 and 2, that it be holy and acceptable unto the Lord. So this morning, what I want us to do in our time allotted, number one, I want us to look at some clearly illustrated responsibilities, and then we're going to close out by asking some questions and making some comparisons, if you will. So number one, responsibilities clearly illustrated. Go with me to the book of John, if you will. John chapter 15 and the first eight verses. We see in the book of John there are seven statements that Jesus makes. We call them the I Am statements. And in this one, we get, I am the true vine, a descriptor of Christ. I want you to notice this here. John 15, beginning in verse 1. I am the true vine. My Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the words I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine. No more can ye, except ye abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me you can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch, and is withered. And men gather them, cast them in the fire, they're burned. If you abide in me, and my words abide in you, you shall ask what you will, and it will be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit, so shall ye be my disciples. Dear friends, number one, my responsibility. I am a branch in the vine that is Christ. Christ, there is one vine. And we're all, as Christians, offshoots of that vine. Now, here's the thing. He has said time and time again in verse 5, you must bring forth much fruit. Verse 6, if you don't bring forth fruit, you're going to be chopped off as a dead limb on a tree or on a vine that does not produce, and then men will burn that. And then notice there, closing out verse 8, my Father is glorified, how? That you bear much fruit. Dear friends, my personal responsibility as being a branch and the Christ that is the vine, I can't get by simply on the fact that other vines are producing fruit. If all the vines around me are producing fruit and I'm not producing fruit, I can't say, well, everybody else around me is doing good. No, what's the husbandman going to do? He's going to identify the dead vine, the dead branch that's shooting off of that, and he's going to take his knife or his axe or his chainsaw and chop it off where it's dead so it doesn't pollute the good vines around it. See, I can't get by on the fact that everybody else may be doing. I've got to do my part as well. Number one, I am a branch. Can't get by on that fact. Number two, go with me to the book of 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse number 5. I want you to notice this here. 1 Peter 2 and 5, I am a stone in the building. Another way we are depicted in Scripture, 1 Peter 2, 5, I'm the stone in the building. Ye also, Peter says, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house, holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. Flip back to Timothy, if you will. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse number 15. Timothy doesn't say the exact same words, but he has the same thought. As Paul writes to Timothy, he's giving him important instructions. He says, verse 14, I hope to see you shortly. But if I don't, verse 15, that if I tarry long, thou mayest know how thou ought to behave thyself in the house of God. What is that, Paul? That's the church of the living God. What is that, Paul? That's the pillar and the ground of truth. Paul's writing to Timothy, giving him instructions how you behave yourself in the church, the pillar and the ground. The church, according to Peter, is made up of lively stones. Dear friends, I can't get by on the fact that other stones fit well into their respective places, and the other stones support the building, but I don't. Guess what? If you've got a foundation issue, now luckily we don't build our house on actual rocks anymore. It's all concrete. But if you think about building on rocks and trying to mash them, find the right one, if you have a rock that's not performing well, you can always pull it out and put a good-fitting rock in. See, I can't get by on the fact in our spiritual building, if all the other stones are supporting the weight of this building and I'm not, well, they can't cover for me. I've got to carry my weight as well. It's a similar illustration than with the vine, is it not? Number three, go to the book of Revelation, if you will. Revelation chapter 1, verse 20, and the introductory material to that chapter, right before we get the letter to the seven churches of Asia Minor. I want you to notice here, because I am a candle in the candlestick, and I must shine. The mystery of the seven stars, Revelation 1:20, which thou sawest in thy right hand, the seven golden candlesticks. the seven stars are the seven angels of the seven churches, and the seven candlesticks are the seven churches. John sees a vision. What's going on? I don't understand this. He's seeing all these different lights. There are seven churches that begin in chapter 2 through chapter 3, right there in Asia Minor, as you sail in to Ephesus. It kind of goes in a snaking position to get to all of them. But as he sees these, they are all lights. Go to Philippians chapter 2, if you will. Philippians chapter 2 and verse number 15. We've got to make sure we are doing our part. Paul tells those in Philippi, he says in verse 14, do all things without murmurings and disputings. I'm a firm believer. Some people have never read that verse in the Bible. Do all things without murmurings and disputings. Why? That you might be blameless and you might be harmless. You can be the sons of God without rebuke in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation among whom you shine as lights in the world. Why do we do all things without murmuring and disputings? Because the world is wicked and dark and perverse, and you are to shine as light in that darkness. But if you're over here murmuring and disputing against one another, then you can't shine in that darkness. See how Jesus put it in the Sermon on the Mount, if you will. Right after the Beatitudes, he hops into this thought. Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse number 13. Matthew 5 and 13. First off, he says, you are the salt of the earth. If the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is therefore good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden under the foot of men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle, put it under a bushel. No, they put it on a candlestick that it gives light to the whole house. Let your light so shine before men, they may see your good work and glorify your Father which is in heaven. See, we've got to personally let our light shine. You don't say, shine your light. We let our light shine. See, I can't get by on the fact that all the other candles around me are giving light. It's real easy to tell if you've got five or six or eight candles and seven of them are lit. It's real easy to tell which one's not lit, is it not? See, that's my responsibility, is I've got to let my light shine. Why? That it may glorify God. But my last personal responsibility, as we look in the story of the talents, is I have been given one or more talents. And I must use the one or the many to the best of my ability. See, that five-talent man, he went out and doubled his money. He brought back 10. Two-talent man, he went out and doubled his money, brought back 4. Now, monetary-wise, with these talents, they were not the same amount. But statistically, they brought back the same return, did they not? 5 doubled is 10, 2 doubled is 4. Statistically, the same return. That one-talent man hid his in the earth because he was afraid. Our responsibility is whatever my talent has been. Maybe I am great at inviting people to come to church. Maybe I'm great at talking to people on the phone. Maybe I'm great at teaching a Bible class. Maybe I'm great at cooking or cleaning. Whatever my talent is, I need to use it to the best of my ability because I'm going to have to answer for how I use my talents. Now, the story works out well for the five-talent man and the two-talent man. In fact, the five-talent man works out so well, he gets the one-talent man, winds up with 11. The one-talent man does not work out well for him. So that's my responsibility. I am a vine in the branch, a stone in the building, a light upon a candlestick, and I must use my talents. But I want to spend the rest of my time. If every member here at the Lord's Church of Christ that meets at Arlington, if every member at Arlington were exactly like me, now, don't be thinking about Justin in this example. You replace your name with you, so it'd be with Gary, with Brad, or with Bobby, or Dustin. If every member at Arlington were like me, what kind of church would this be? What group of called out individuals from the world would this be? If every member were like me, what would the attendance be? How many would be here? How many would be absent? Go up to Hebrews chapter 10. in verse number 25. The hallmark passage, I dare say, if there ever was one on attendance in the New Testament. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25. Paul has just had a let us passage, not lettuce as in lettuce in a salad, but let us. Verse 22, draw near, let us, 23, hold fast, let us, 24, consider unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. It is my job to attend, to not forsake the assembling of ourselves, to not forsake when we have scheduled. The wisdom of the eldership has said we will benefit when we meet at these times. Then, brethren, I should do everything I can to meet at those times. Now, I get it. You get sick. Nobody wants to. I wish we didn't. I was kind of thinking about that earlier in Gary's lesson about assurance. I look forward to the time where nobody gets sick. Won't that be nice? But until then, we get sick. I get that. Heaven forbid, your car could break down. If your car breaks down on the way to church, I get it. You couldn't come that day. But if you sat there because you wanted to watch infomercials all morning, I don't know what they show on Sunday morning. I've never been home to watch it. But if we'll sit there and watch infomercials, now you're forsaking the assembly. Now you're deciding, well, I don't think I'd want to do that. See, what if every member were like me? Would we have every pew full? Would we need to talk about rearranging that? Or would we need to downsize and just meet in the classroom? Well, that's something only you can answer. What about this one? If every member were like me, what would the contribution be? Go to the book of Deuteronomy, if you will. Deuteronomy chapter 16, the second giving of the law. Deuteronomy 16, 16 and 17. You're going, oh great, here he goes. He's already talked about attendance. Now he's going to talk about giving. These things we've got to talk about, brethren. Look in Deuteronomy 16, 16 and 17. Three times in a year shall all thy males appear before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose, in the feast of unleavened bread, number one. Number two, the feast of weeks. And number three, the feast of tabernacles. And they shall not appear before the Lord empty. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee. So under the Old Testament law, they were commanded three feasts a year. And the males, the representatives of the family, they were to approach God. And you can't just approach God empty-handed. You've got to give to him. What do I give? What's the number? There's not a number. He says, according as you've been blessed. According as God has given you. But that's under the Old Testament law. And there'll be somebody who says, well, we're not living under the Old Testament, which I would say you're correct. Look in Acts chapter 11 and verse number 29. Acts 11, 29. The Bible says, and the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren which dwelt in Judea. How did they give? Well, according to their ability. What's that mean? That means the man that could only have given $10, he gave $10. But the man that could have given $100, he didn't give $10. He gave what he could to the best of his abilities. That's why Paul says, 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, not forsaking the assembling, or that's that one. Upon the first day of the week, as I've given order to the church of Galatia, even so do you. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store. There be no gatherings when I come. One of the five acts of worship is we give on the first day of the week. That's a commandment. What do you give according to your ability? Dear friends, if every member at Arlington were like me, what would the contribution be? I'm not going to look at the board behind me, but would it be more? Would it be less? Well, you can only answer that one. What about this one? If every member were like me at Arlington, what would our influence be? Go to the book of Matthew, Matthew 13 and verse 33. Would our influence be like leaven? Would we be beneficial to those around us? Matthew 13, 33. Jesus is going to give you seven parables in this chapter. We don't have time to do all of them. But he says, another parable spoke he unto them, that the kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which a woman took, hid three measures of meal, till the whole was leavened. I tell you what, leavening agents, yeast, blows my mind if you truly watch it. I don't just sit there and watch bread rise because that's very boring. But I do think it's interesting. You can have all your material and then you just put just a little bit of yeast in there and you cover it up and you come back in 20, 30 minutes and you almost wish you would have put it in a bigger container, right? See, that little bit gives you a whole lot. Is that how we are? We go out in the world, give the world a little bit, and we get a lot of results. You know, leaven can be good. Bad leaven, bad yeast, if you put bad in, it's not going to rise like you want. In fact, it's going to spoil your whole baking experience, whatever you're making, bread or whatever. So you've got to be careful. Would we be like leaven? We've already talked about Matthew 5, 13 and 14. What would the influence? Would we be like salt? You ever wondered or ever thought about how wonderful salt is? Salt, sodium, chloride, two elements in and of themselves that really normally wouldn't like each other and definitely wouldn't like water. Because sodium and water that goes poof, it's fun to play with. No, I don't recommend it. But then you combine it together, you get table salt. Salt is wonderful. You have a bad meal, they serve you some food, you've gone out, and what do? It needs a little bit of taste. See, I mean, you just get a little bit of salt. And there's that fine line, right? It seems like one grain of salt too much, and I've over-salted this. But you put a little bit of salt, you do it just right, you season it just right, it makes the whole dish more enjoyable. Dear friends, the world needs the salt of the Christian. The world has lost its flavor, and we need to go out and give it the flavor of Christ. Would we be that way? What about our influence in the home? Are we telling people to do things God's way, or are we just saying, well, tell you what, let the world decide how we live. Let the world decide how we are to act, dear friends. Notice here what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 14 and following. In 1 Corinthians 7, Paul is addressing the impending destruction of Jerusalem, which would happen in A.D. 70. And evidently, the church at Corinth had sent Paul a letter. We don't have that letter, but I can deduce what they asked him because I've got the answers. Three main questions in 1 Corinthians 7. Number one, is it good for a man to touch a woman? Number two, should the married stay married? And number three, should the unmarried stay unmarried? Good for a man to touch a woman? Yes, certain situations. You should stay married if you're married. And Paul says, because the destruction of Jerusalem's coming, it might be best if you don't get married, if you don't have to at the moment. But I want you to notice here what he says in verse 14, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife sanctified by the husband. Else were your children unclean, but now they're holy. If the unbelieving depart, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God hath called us to peace. What knowest thou, O wife, whether thou shalt save thy husband? Or knowest thou, O man, whether thou shalt save thy wife? What's our influence? Growing up, there was a man who I thought was a Christian because he came to every worship service and came to every VBS and gospel meeting and fellowship meal. He was there at all of them. And then one day he comes down the aisle and wants to be baptized. He was not a Christian. And he'd attended church there at Leone with his wife, I believe, for about 40 years. And then became a Christian. See, she had that good, positive influence in the home of what it means to be a Christian. And she helped convert him. Don't give up. You have a spouse that's not believing, not faithful. Don't give up. You can't make them believe, but boy, you can show them the benefits of being a Christian. You can make them want to be faithful. Don't give up, dear friends. We need to have a good influence in the home and a saving influence as well. We must do what God has commanded. Would our influence be every person we see has a soul? I hope so. We need to move on for sake of time. If every member at Arlington were like me, what would our reputation be? Acts 2:47 talks about having favor with all the people. They did what God had commanded. If every member were like me, would Arlington be a name? People say, I know about that church over there at Arlington. Boy, that's a good group of people, and they love each other, and they love welcoming people in, this, that, and the other. Would it be, would they go to Arlington? Well, I've never heard them mention that. I never even hear them talk about going to church, let alone where. What would our reputation be? What about our strength? If every member were as strong as me, would we be a strong congregation or a weak one? Notice what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse number 10. You're probably familiar with this passage. Ephesians 6 and 10. Paul's going to talk about the whole armor of God. But notice here, finally, my brethren, before he says that, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. If everyone had the same spiritual strength I do, would we be strong fighting off evil, going out and trying to convert souls? Or would we just be passive and say, boy, I really hope somebody else goes and talks to them because I don't want to. What's our spiritual strength? What about number 7 if you're keeping count? If every member like me, what would our spiritual growth be? Acts 2:47, they found favor with God and men, and the Lord added to the church daily such as should be saved. If every member like me, would we be out converting more souls? Would I see the need of seeing lost souls around me with my co-workers, with my family members, with my neighbors? Or would I say, well, they've got their own way of thinking and I've got mine and I don't really want to talk to them? Don't let that be said of you, dear friends. We move on. If every member at Arlington were like me, what sort of children would we have? What would our children be if every parent were like me? Would you be a godly parent? If you're in Ephesians 6, drop back to verse 4. He says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment of promise. It might be well with thee, thou may live long on the earth. And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. If every parent were like me at Arlington, would we all bring our children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord? Or would we say, well, here's your Bible, read it? Or would it be, hey, let's talk about this. Let me tell you the story of Jesus. Let me do this. Let's study this. Let's study that. If every member were like me, what about the next generation? Would we be raising a good generation? Or would you be scared to see the results coming up? We move on. If every member were like me, how friendly would we be? Go to Proverbs chapter 18 and verse number 24. Proverbs 18 and 24. If everybody were just as friendly and happy to be here as I am, how would we be? Proverbs 18 and 24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. To have friends, guess what? You've got to be friendly. Very rarely do you have somebody says, I want to be your friend, and you're over there being a grouch. If we were all friendly, how would the atmosphere be? What about this one? If every member were like me, what about outsiders? How many people who are not here this morning would we invite to come worship with us? Go to the book of Isaiah, Isaiah 2 and verse number 3. Isaiah 2 and verse 3, and a beautiful passage prophesying the forecoming of the Lord's church on Mount Zion in Jerusalem. Look at verse 3. And people shall go and say, come ye, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. Teach us, He will teach us His ways, we walk in His paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Would we see people who are not here today and grab them by the hand and say, come, let us go to worship together. Can I pick you up? Can I meet you there? Can we do something afterwards? Go out to eat? Can I come over to your house for breakfast before? Would we be excited about bringing people who are not here in? Or would we look around and go and say, well, I think every pew is just about as full as I want it to be? No. We want to bring in more people. Let's keep going. If every member were like me, what about would we invite visitors to our home when we have our brothers and our sisters over? The Hebrew writer talks about entertaining angels unawares. Now, I'm not saying you're going to have an angel over at your house, but angel just means a messenger. So in a way, you could have God's messengers, the people of God, over. Would we be willing to do more things with our brothers and sisters outside of worship if every member were like me? Or would we go, I see them about 4 hours a week, that's pretty good. No, I hope not. That's not enough. I think we need more. Two more, then we're done. What kind of harmony and peace would we have in the Lord's church if everyone was like me? If every member were like me, go to 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 20. Because there was not harmony in the church of Corinth. That's part of the main reason why Paul writes to them. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse number 20. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath God not made foolish the wisdom of this world? See, at Corinth, they were divided over this thought and this person and that person. There was no harmony and peace at church Corinth because word had gotten back to Paul. It was that bad. What would we do? Now, we do need to mark those which cause division and offenses, Romans 16, 17, and 18. But we can have harmony and peace with our brother and sister in Christ. You know what? We're all human. And we might not all see everything the same way as in the eyes of the world, but we can still live harmoniously one with another. And finally, maybe this should have been first. That's what we sometimes do first. What about our Sunday school or classes? If every member like me, would every member place an importance on coming to Sunday school? I love Psalm 122. In fact, I almost latched on to Psalm 122 during the pandemic. Psalm 122, verse 1. Go there very quickly and we'll close out our lesson. Psalm 122 and 1. I thought about this when at different times you had to meet online. Had to kind of meet socially distanced, maybe in a parking lot, and some places did. Things just weren't as they were, as they seemed they should be. We were still worshiping. Look at Psalm 122 and 1. David said, I was glad when they said unto me, let us go to the house of God. David was excited when somebody said, it's time to go worship. It's time to go study. Is that you? If every member were like me, what would our Sunday school be? What would our classes be? What would our Wednesday night classes be? What would our vacation Bible school and gospel meeting and extra times outside of worship, what would they be if every member loved the Lord and treated Him the same way that I do? Well, I can't answer all these questions for you. I'd answer them for me as we're going, but you've got to answer them for you. I do hope this has helped you realize your responsibilities to the Lord and His church here at Arlington. As a member of this church, you have certain responsibilities. You, I, we all must do. My question for you is, are you living the way you should? If not, as the old song says, you better straighten up, fly right. Because you've got responsibilities. And you're going to have to give account for the way you lived your life. Now here's the thing, you do what you're supposed to, that's going to be an easy reckoning day, is it not? You've done everything according to the book, chapter, verse, that's going to be easy. You haven't been, you need to make that right now. If you're not a Christian, once again, by hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, being baptized, you can become a Christian today. And then you remain faithful, dear Christian friends. If you're not faithful, as we sing this invitation song, we encourage you to become faithful. If you need prayers for strength or forgiveness, we're here for that as well. If we can help in any way at all, please let it be known while we stand and while we sing.